Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch, a Wednesday edition on 720 WGN. Kind of a gray day here on Michigan Avenue in the Allstate Showcase studio. But Terry Savage is in the studio to join me this Wednesday morning, afternoon, I guess I should say. Terry, welcome
Hello.
Back to the Business Lunch. So, a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk to Constantine Byzance, I think his name is Byzance. I don't know. He's from Austria, but he's the CEO of Aloha Foods. It's the sort of organic, you know, good for you sort of foods, and they sell them at Target and things. So it's a wellness program sold at Target, which is new. But this guy, when he was 14 years old, sold the business he started. It says in his bio for $220 million.
Hello, free enterprise. The Austrian School of Economics, you know, is behind the free market. We don't think about it very much now, but Friedrich von Hayek was a famous economist.
Well, I was thinking of that just this morning, as a matter of fact.
Were you?
No,
yeah, when you heard that?
Okay.
Well, anyway, free markets rule, and Austria has had a long tradition of entrepreneurship.
So we'll talk to Constantine about that.
Good.
I'm not sure. I can't imagine $220 million at 14. Though. Well, I can't imagine it.
Well, look at some of the young entrepreneurs we have here. I mean, that's what's special about America, particularly because we do have so many. I mean, Steve Jobs, when did he start?
Sure.
The dropouts from college. No, that's not an incentive to drop out. But a lot of the brightest, newest, youngest minds are creative thinkers, and America traditionally gives them an opportunity to build a business. Now, it'd be interesting what kind of incentives actually encourage this kind of growth.
Goes right to tax policy.
Dow's down 27 points right now.
All right, Donald Trump's in town today. He was at the Polish National Congress. Yeah, the Polish American Congress. And now he's down, I think, to Bolingbrook for a fundraiser. The big debate was Monday night. Most people think Hillary Clinton did well. We'll see what the polls show. But my prediction was that she would win and he would go up. So we'll see how that works.
That's interesting.
Does it matter? I mean,
I've avoided the politics of this. The economics are so murky that I haven't really written about it yet or made a comment. But interestingly, historically, when Democrats have been in power, that is presidential power with not an obstructionist House, the market has done better. Primarily, the theory goes in the olden days, which is before right now, that Democrats spend more, print more, borrow more, and put more money into the economy. Well, you could have hardly put more money into the economy than the Fed has done since 2007, 2008. So we'll see if that holds true this time. As I looked at the debate, I thought about it just strictly from an economic perspective now. I have my own thoughts on a lot of other things. So what was bullish about the market for Trump, theoretically, is that he wants to do huge tax cuts on business. And if you believe those tax cuts mean business will invest more, spend more, create more jobs, that should be bullish for economic growth. The biggest negative on Trump that could wipe out all that tax cut benefits, if you believe in that, is this whole idea of creating a trade war, which is how we got into the Depression in the 1930s, and which really would impact jobs at home. Even though, yes, jobs have moved overseas, a lot of American jobs are dependent on free international trade. So that's one side of the aisle. Hillary, as I said, she's talked about spending on infrastructure. One might think that the market could interpret that as bullish, a lot more economic growth through spending. On the other hand, her tax policies of really raising taxes on the most productive people are seen as a real disincentive for the stock market. So all in all, I think the reason the market is holding here, despite all this talk out in the air, is that nobody can figure out which of these candidates would have economic policies that would be better for A, the economy, and B, the market. And finally, to bring it all to a point, no matter who gets elected in November, even though Janet Yellen is testifying right now that they don't have a fixed timetable, don't count on December, the fact is that the Fed is very likely to raise rates in December. And so that will have more of an impact on the stock market than any immediate repercussions from the election.
And you start with those assumptions that what the candidates say they want to do, they'll be able to do.
Yeah, that's
not that they will
assumption.
Do, but that they would even be able to do, right?
I mean, yeah, sure, because Congress could be obstinate, and we've seen that. So that's a huge assumption. And that's why I think, usually I'm called by CNN and come on and discuss all these kinds of things. Nobody's talking about the economics.
There's no room for stuff like that. I'm
talking about the current economic issues, the impact of infrastructure spending versus tax increases or cuts. And we're not talking about the fact we have $17 trillion, $18 trillion national debt. And that if interest rates go up, that's going to put a bigger hole in our budget as we have to pay more interest on it. So nobody's talking about my good stuff. But it's out there, and it's going to have an impact on you next year.
That's one of the things that came up. You know, there always are critics of the debate, and, you know, you can't cover everything. But there was no sort of area about Social Security or entitlements at all in this first debate. There are two more coming up.
Yeah, we'll see. But, again, there's two issues. A, will they talk sincerely about them? A, do they have a program? B, will they be sincere in revealing the kind of program that can make a dent in some of our problems? And, finally, would they, as you point out clearly, be able to do anything anyway?
Let's go to Capitol Hill, where the CEO of Wells Fargo, right? Is he moving in? Is he just going to spend all this time?
Yeah, well, he's going to be homeless because he won't have any more salary this year, and it's $41 million in equity.
He can live in that new visitor center at Capitol Hill.
Look, I think that a lot of times, Wall Street, which represents our free enterprise economy, does such stupid things and shoots itself not only in the foot, but every other part of its anatomy. And, for example, it's one thing to create incentives that make people do the wrong thing. And it's another thing to fix it by, over a period of years, firing those people. But 5 years later, to not have changed those incentives and to sit there and say, well, we just don't know and we're going to still collect our bonuses and our salaries, this man deserves what his board did, and his board was pressured to do it because of the congressional hearing.
They didn't fire him, right? They took away $41 million in bonuses.
I would say yet. I say his tenure is going to be a very short one from this point out, because the buck does stop at the top. And, there are always mistakes in business. I mean, think about Jamie Dimon and the losses in England, the trader and everything. But he stood up and said, we took our eye off the ball. We missed it. We've set up a new committee. He disclosed it fully and immediately. That's leadership. But to sit there collecting a fat paycheck.
While you fire hundreds who follow your orders.
While you know about it and you fire hundreds who follow. The other thing they're going to do is finally, October 1st, like tomorrow or whatever it is, the next day, they're going to change those sales incentives. But remember, people respond to incentives. So if you raise taxes, you invite people to move away. People do respond to incentives.
That's Terry Savage. Now, we're going to take a break and come back, talk to a friend of yours, right?
I'm so excited about this. You're going to meet one of my dearest friends in the world, Ana Dutra, who is CEO of the Executives Club and is chairing the huge International Women's Forum conference that starts tonight in Chicago.
That's coming up on the Business Lunch. It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGNR. All right, Terry Savage sticks around, but I want to say hello to Ana Dutra. She is the woman behind the International Women's Forum meeting in Chicago starting tonight, right, and then through the rest of the week. Ana, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here, Steve.
You're at the Executive Club of Chicago, right?
The director. I am the CEO of the Executives Club in Chicago, yes.
So which is a harder job, being the CEO there or putting together the Women's Forum, the local meeting?
They are all very challenging and all a lot of fun.
Tell me about the group. I mean, this is quite an influential group coming to Chicago.
Absolutely, and we can move the stock price ourselves. No matter what you say, yeah. I'll tell you. So the International Women's Forum is a truly global network of over 6,000 female leaders, not only in business, Steve, but also in science, government, academia, arts, healthcare, and technology. As I said, when these women get together, they make change happen.
So there's power coming to the city. What comes out of it?
So this conference this year, the name is Crossroads of Change. And think about Chicago as one of the most diverse cities, right? Economically, culturally, from a business segment's perspective. And we're coming to discuss what the future brings to us. So it's all about transformation, entrepreneurialism, and how we can change the economy, really.
You know, I was reading about the forum, and a lot of times when I see women's this or women's that, I think it's going to be all about gender, which I think sells the group short, because it's as if they can only be centered on gender or talk about gender. That's really not the case with the Women's Forum.
Absolutely not. Of course, we bring the parity and the gender perspective in many conversations, but it's all about how we can truly build a global network that can make a difference in business, in quality of life, in progress in general.
Important, too, I would imagine, to bring thought leaders and business leaders to the city to see the city, because the headlines haven't been so good. But when they see the city, they'll probably leave with a better notion.
That's a great point, because that's a great focus of ours. It's to show how much Chicago has to offer culturally, from an architectural perspective, food, sports teams, right?
And, right now, anyway.
So we bring it, and I always say that, if you, I'm not born and raised in Chicago, but I chose this as my city. And when you think about everything we can offer in Chicago, we have something special for everybody here.
I'm excited. We have a number of forums. I'm moderating one tomorrow about the future of rebooting business, and we have the heads of Walmart, of Google Plus, so we're going to learn about this, of Visa and PayPal. Not all women on the panels, by the way, but a lot of the panel, at least certainly half of the panelists are women, discussing what's going to happen in the future. There's a panel on technology. There are a panel on transportation. So these are huge forums where the leading experts are talking cutting-edge stuff, and it's very exciting. I've been to the forums in Montreal, at Vancouver, Israel was a big one a couple of years ago, and these happen all over the world, but so it's especially exciting to have them in Chicago.
They're all right here. Anna, what do you hope? I might have asked you this, but will the session, does it end with sort of a concrete statement, or what do you hope the end result is?
Well, the end result is always discussing options to move the needle in a number of sectors, and then we take those back to our countries and spread them there, and then work on the solutions on a local basis. Because as you know, we're going to discuss topics broadly, but when we go back to our homes, we need to understand how we can create impact incorporating the local realities too.
What are you most looking forward to?
Oh, my gosh. I'm looking forward to everything. No, I'm just looking forward to Friday. I say I'm like the bride that prepared for the wedding, is exhausted, but this is going to be so much fun.
You're not looking forward to Sunday when everyone goes home?
I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to. We have one of our behind the scenes is on our own CME group, where Terry and I sit on the board, and that's the largest fintech exchange in the world. But we are going to take these women behind the scenes and show them how this organization can actually move sectors of the economy worldwide.
That's
going to be fun. And Terry's leading that.
That's only because Anna is busy leading absolutely everything else that's going on in Chicago for the next 3 days. We're at the Hilton. It's closed sessions. But if you see women walking around with a fabulous blue bag with the skyline of Chicago, you'll know they're from all over the world, from Asia and Africa and Europe, and they are all here to discuss the future of everything.
It's the International Women's Forum. Anna Dutra, thanks very much for talking about it today. I appreciate
it. Thank you, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch now on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Frank Sennett is in the studio from Cranes, and we talk about different stories in the news. Frank, welcome.
Thank you.
Before we get to it, though, I just want to mention quickly, I've been emailing back and forth with Andrea Darlis from WGN. She just got back last night, took a group of WGN listeners to Greece.
Wonderful.
Great trip. And it reminded me that I'm leading a group to Iceland. And we leave June 2nd. It's 9 days. And I haven't really done much talking about our advertising on the air about it, because it's just Iceland is so hot. We can only get, so many rooms. So it's going to fill up pretty quickly. But we've got about 9 rooms left. So if you're interested in joining me next summer on a WGN trip to Iceland, go to WGNradio.com. The details are there. Or always go to SteveBertrandTravel.com. You can get all of the details there. But we'll see the geysers and the waterfalls and,
I like your new slogan, too.
What is it?
Check yourself before you Reykjavik yourself.
Check yourself before you Reykjavik yourself. Or call me at 847-606-6065. But
I'm a branding consultant.
We'll teach you. Before we go, we were going to have 6 lessons about how to pronounce towns in Iceland, because I read the itinerary and everything. It's just beyond me. I can't do any of it. It's like Montana.
But Bjork is your personal travel guide,
well,
right?
Well, she, not travel so much, but fashion.
There
she,
you go.
She dresses me.
I like your wings today.
Thank you very
Gossamer.
Much. Gossamer. Well, you know, it's...
Gossamer's your look. It's your jam.
Cheap, but I knew you were coming in. All right, go to SteveBertrandTravel.com or WGNRadio.com. Let's go to McDonald's.
Yeah, that could be our next business lunch. If you want table service, you wouldn't think McDonald's usually, but the McDonald's of the future at Chicago and State has table service now, as well as electronic self-serve kiosks where you can put your order in, and they've got LED lighted displays and all sorts of amazing
things.
Kind
of funny to me that they're going forward and backward. I mean, they're backward a little bit to table service, but very forward with the ordering at your own kiosk and all of that.
Yeah, and it's a complete revamp that's happening not just at the River North store, but soon at the Rock and Roll McDonald's, which is also in River North, and restaurants in New York, New Jersey, Florida, and some other markets. It's a huge push by McDonald's to remake their stores so that millennials will flock.
Okay, so I read that they're going to have digital menus at the drive-up.
Yes.
What does that mean? Does that mean that they're touch screens or just...
No, I think just LED displays. Actually, the McDonald's...
So bells and whistles.
Yeah, okay. The one on Wabash near Randolph has got the digital menus inside, and they're basically just big flat panel TVs, and they rotate the offerings. And
I got you.
They make the food seem so enticing.
So they put the menu on a TV, kind of.
Basically,
okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's to lure young, impressionable millennials like our producer, Michael Heidemann, and others.
Exactly. It's the future, Michael.
The future. Get your hand out of the fries, Michael. Produce this show. Explain this next one to me. There's a study that says, or who was it? Aon Hewitt put together that our salaries in the Chicago area, base salaries, aren't necessarily going to go up so much next year, but our bonuses are, which I guess is really welcome news to the people who get bonuses.
Yeah, so pay for performance is still a hot trend in the corporate sector. It's a way to keep a lid on rising base salary costs while rewarding your peak performers. And this survey that we have out now from Aon Hewitt is projecting flat compensation budget across the board for U.S. companies. But the good news is, as you say, for people who do get bonuses, the variable pay budgets are going to go up in Chicago. That's the projection. Get yourself a job with a
bonus
plan. Yeah,
I'm trying to remember. I mean, I think we've had bonuses. Well, we do have bonuses here from time to time, but I've never been particularly confident that the bonuses are fairly allocated.
That is one thing. Right? It's very subjective.
Pay me less, but promise me what you're going to pay me, I think.
At Cranes, you know, we do have a thing at the beginning of the year where you have objectives that are very concrete that you have to hit in order to qualify, so that helps.
Right,
that helps
right.
make it seem fair. Now, this survey also found, this is interesting, only a little more than 1 in 3, 38% of workers feel that they are fairly paid overall. So, you know, if they don't raise those salaries and people aren't feeling it's fair, they might go next door.
And they can go next door now because there are jobs next door where there didn't used to be.
Exactly. So we'll see if they can hold off that wage increase pressure.
I should say, in defense of this place, we have those goals that we have to set up too, and I just don't play very well. I just hate it. And Todd is like, you know, we need this to do it, and it's like pulling teeth for me.
And Todd Manley's so mean.
Exactly.
A
you
mean
know,
man.
It's like, would you please just set a couple goals? I'm like, I've got them. They're right up here.
Yeah, he hit me the last time I saw him.
Did he? I'm not surprised by that at all. You probably earned it. Hey, a few weeks ago...
He's a lovely guy.
He's actually, wonderful, yeah. Man. A few weeks ago, we talked about the options, the Murphy's Bleacher Bar, right? That
yeah.
they were selling options to playoff tickets.
Mm-hmm.
And Cranes has a story right now about many of the rooftops, if not most of them, are now owned by the Ricketts family, right?
Yeah, so last year they didn't quite have as many, but this year the Ricketts family has 10 rooftop businesses it now owns or controls next to the ballpark, and they're all rebranded under WrigleyRooftops.com. So they're looking to make big bucks outside of the stadium as well as inside the ballpark for the playoffs and potentially the World Series. They are doing dynamic pricing, so as the supply decreases, the price increases. There's no resale market because they will take your credit card information and check your driver's license at the door to make sure that it matches. So no scalpers. They're going to get every nickel out of this for themselves. So a very smart strategy is paying off for the Ricketts.
So what does that mean? When all of the tickets go on sale, they're cheaper than when there are two left?
Yeah. So for the NLDS, which starts next week, some tickets last week were selling for $188 a piece for, you know, the kind of limited view rooftops. Then other price points for tickets in the rooftops with a better vantage were up to $247. Now, most of those are sold out now. The remaining tickets now start at $217 and go up to $310. So as the supply diminishes, that price that you'll see on the website will go up until once they're gone, because you're not going to be able to get them from, you know, a scalper.
I checked with the Murphy's people this morning, too, because I knew we were going to talk about it. And they're sold out of their options for the World Series, but they still have some for the National League Championship Series. So if you go to their website, I guess you can buy an option on that. But what's the risk there? They're going.
Exactly, right? They're going all the way. So $55 for the right to buy a $240 rooftop ticket for the NLCS at Murphy's. Those are still available. So, I mean, if you really want to go, what's your excuse?
Exactly. You can, you know, it's a good point because it's something that is absolutely obtainable. You can get a guarantee.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. Are you going to go?
I have season tickets, my friend.
You do? So we are going to go. It's going to be so much fun.
If you promise to wear those gossamer wings.
I'll dress up for you with my new Trunk Club clothes.
Oh, I see. A good segue there.
So Trunk Club, which is something that they used to say, order the clothes, we'll send you a bunch, take 10 days to send them back. No obligation, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there are obligations now.
It felt like maybe it was too good to be true,
and
it was. Now, here's the deal. The $25 home try-on fee only kicks in if you don't buy anything. So if you get a trunk of clothes and you buy something, that $25 fee will be applied to the purchase. So as long as you know, if you're a customer who's just a looky-loo or you just, you know, want to go out tonight and put the tag in your collar and then send it back.
Just want to look fancy for a couple days.
Exactly. That's a problem.
Right.
But Nordstrom owns Trunk Club now. They're trying to make a little money. So they're saying, look, we're gonna penalize you if you do that. And also, you only have 5 days to return the trunk as compared to the 10 days previously. So maybe there were people who were like, I've got a wedding this weekend, and maybe I'll buy, you know, I'll try before I buy.
So now it's going to become like the Columbia Record Club. You can have all these ascots that you didn't want.
And some Dickies, too.
Oh, that's Frank Sennett. You can read more at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll see you next Wednesday. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and that music can only mean we're not going to Hawaii. We're going to talk to Constantine Byzance, who is the CEO of Aloha. Constantine, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Aloha.
Aloha, I guess, right? I don't know where to start with you, because we could start with kite surfing maybe, but I want to go back to when you were 14 years old. Now, I read that you sold a business that you created at 14 for more than $200 million. Is that correct?
This is almost correct. I started my first company when I was 14 and kept on doing this until now. Like, Aloha is my sixth company. And the last company before Aloha, we sold to eBay for a little bit over $200 million.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, so you weren't 14. How old are you now, Constantine?
I'm 43 now.
So you're an old man.
I am old. I have some time to practice.
You know, selling a company for $200 million at 43, that's not a story at all.
Exactly. It's kind of boring.
Tell me about Aloha, and it's this idea of, well, I don't know if are you selling healthy foods or are you selling a lifestyle? What exactly it is that you're selling here?
Yeah, I think we do both. So Aloha is actually my baby that I'm truly passionate about. Before the company that I started in order to sell at some point, but at some point I realized I want to do something that has an impact on people's lives, and basically driven on a personal problem that I had when I came to the US. Like, I found it very difficult to figure out what is actually healthy for me and what not, and there's so many conflicting messages and so many brands claim to be healthy, and then you talk to a doctor, nutritionist, and they tell you, no, that's not healthy, that's actually really bad for you. And so I couldn't find any brands or products that taste good on the one hand side, but they're also totally good for me. And that kind of like helped me to live healthy. So I decided to create a brand that does all that. So I started Aloha with a mission to help everybody to live healthier and also happier.
It's a real growing market, isn't it? The idea of health food or lifestyle foods.
Yes, there's many that claim to be healthy, but unfortunately, not everybody who claims to be healthy is actually truly healthy. And it's incredibly difficult to make healthy or good taste good without using any artificial flavors or sweeteners or fillers and sugars or chemicals. And also offer all organic ingredients at a price point that are affordable. So I think in the really kind of like top media, there are not too many players out there.
We're talking to Constantine Byzance, the CEO of Aloha. Okay, you talked about price point there, and that's what struck me about this company is that you've got a deal where you're in what I think almost every Target store in this country, and it seems like an unusual marriage that a health food company, relatively small health food company, would be married to a big box discount store. Tell me about that.
We're really excited about this partnership. Actually, we launched Aloha 2.5 years ago, and the first 2 years ago, we were only and exclusively available online. And again, we're very passionate about the quality of our products, packaging, and also promoting a holistic, healthy lifestyle. And our products is the upgrade, everything that people like, that are in the package way. So, for example, we have protein bars and snacks and protein shakes and superfood products. And all of a sudden, we got a call from Target, and they say, hey, guys, we have been observing you for more than 2 years, and we have done extensive consumer testing, and we want to not only carry you, but we want to carry you out of the gate in all of our 1,800 stores.
That's a big boost.
So that was a big boost. Yeah, that was amazing for us, and it takes me very well to our philosophy, because our mission is to democratize the cleanest and the healthiest product and make them truly available for everybody, not only where we are in New York or like in cities like Chicago or LA, but also like all over the country.
Okay, but so when you get that sort of deal, though, you've got to all of a sudden start producing a lot more. And I would imagine if you're a smallish company producing high quality food, that there's got to be a challenge there to sort of maintain things. Has the deal with Target made you compromise at all?
From day one, when we started the business, we always knew that we want to be mass market. So we actually chose very carefully suppliers and ingredients that we're able to scale big time. So it was not, it was not such a challenge. Like, we worked with partners that are used to drive volumes, and it works actually really well. I mean, the challenge is the Target and these big retailers demand a 98.5% service accuracy, and we're pretty good. Like, for some reason, it works. But we have a great team. We have an amazing team with very experienced people that come from the food industry. That have done that before for very different brands. So we're really happy to have a very experienced team.
All right, I'm going to go check out my Target and see what you got. Constantine Byzance, thanks very much for joining us today, the CEO of Aloha.
Thank you.
You bet. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.